Yo, Poppies, we're back. I hope you're doing... Nee, so geht's nicht.
Yes, das muss am Anfang.
Oh, rusty ass English, Alter. Poppies, what's good? Your favorite podcast is back on the road and obviously in English. My name is Lennart Stechmann and with me, from live from Bamberg, as always, the great Dom Theodoru, aka Dom Zaps.
Poppies, I'm very happy to be live again with this overachiever on the other side, Lennart Stechmann. And of course, you forgot to mention the episode. We are on episode 37 and Brain Pops maybe I repeat myself, but it's the podcast approaching mental and physical challenges behind the scenes of professional sports. And that's exactly where we're heading today, right, Lennart?
Yes, I'm so glad you make us professional again. Like, you balance me out all the time. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's what we're doing today because we have a really, really interesting guest today, Alex Ruoff. He has been all over the show in basketball business, and he will have probably a lot of stories to tell. We know him both from our days in Göttingen, you even longer than me, and now he's with you in Bamberg again. You work together with him. He's playing for Bamberg. And I'm really excited to have him on the show because I know what a great of a guy he is.
And adding to that, I think he has been in the pipeline for quite a little bit already. I have the feeling that his name has always been mentioned, and he got nominated by, correct me if I'm wrong, Harper?
Maybe also by Harper, but I'm for sure he also got nominated by Dominik Spohr.
Yeah, for sure, you're right. Yeah, and what can I say? I'm really looking forward to this one. What kind of topics did we plan a little bit, Lennart?
Two topics. I'm really like, we have some general questions, you know, the regular stuff. But something I want to try today is to get a little bit more into detail with like basketball tactics. I want to know how he plays the pick and roll. I really want, like, because I really think he is a great pick and roll player and really knows how to read. And I want to see if we can kind of bring that to this podcast, or if that just sounds boring as fuck because we can't see nothing. But that's what I want to try. And spirituality, religion, something we didn't have yet in connection to sports and performance. And that's something I know, or I believe he is into. So I want to ask him about that also. You?
Nice. I mean, it sounds like I'm listening to a podcast then, because...
you know, the regular, as always.
What should I say, Lennart? Of course, some physical aspects as well, because he is a true workhorse. But also, you forgot to mention the mental aspects of the game. That's probably also something very interesting.
Yeah.
All right, let's just stop it and let's get right to it.
Anything in particular you want to focus on with the physical aspect? Or I know you work with him a long time. Maybe you have something.
Yeah, it's funny enough. We had a workout today. And we were obviously also already talking about the podcast a little bit. And we always like talking to each other a lot. So I think let's save that for the episode.
All right. Sounds good. Then here we go. And here we are. Alex is with us right now. Hey, Alex, how you doing?
I'm doing great. What's up, fellas?
Really good to have you on the show.
Yeah, man. Thanks. Honored to be on the show.
Well, I have to say before we start, it's I'm looking at my screen, and I see you, both of you, and you have almost the same beards. Is that a coincidence?
We're just here to shame you, Dom, for not having a beard.
Exactly.
We've been talking about it for months.
Like, yeah, this episode was in the pipeline for a long time, so I needed some time, you know.
And on top of that, Alex, I'm not sure if you've noticed, but you know, I'm always mad at Leonard when he puts on this shirt or whatever he's wearing there.
It's the podcast shirt.
I like it. It's a strong flex.
Yeah.
Well done,
Mark. And now on top of that, he puts the beard on there. It is what it is.
Yeah, hide your girlfriends. We get it, Leonard.
All right, getting uncomfortable. Let's get some questions going here. Maybe first to the people that don't know you, maybe just a real quick introduction. Who's Alex Ruoff? What do they need to know before this podcast?
Alex Ruoff, ball player from West Virginia. Now I'm an old vet. Travel the world. I'm thankful for it. Love my family. Love the outdoors. Any activities better with a beer in your hand? Yeah, that's about it.
Sounds about right.
Pretty simple person. I like to have my dog with me most of the time.
Oh, Mia, right?
Yeah,
Mia
is Maya, her name?
Maya. My bad.
That's all right, man. I won't tell her you said it.
How many countries did you play in yet?
How many? I don't know. Six.
Oh, let me walk you through it, guys, because then I sound a little bit prepared. Okay.
All right.
So it was Belgium.
Yeah.
After Belgium, you went to the G League.
Okay.
True.
Yeah.
Then Göttingen, Pro A, BBL. Yeah. Then Bilbao, Spain.
Okay.
Ludwigsburg.
Back to Germany. That's right.
Yeah, back to Göttingen. Then Badalona, Spain.
Okay.
Then NBC. Helsinki. True.
After NBC. Helsinki.
Back to Göttingen. Japan. Now Bamberg.
Yeah, Japan. A lot of back to Germanys.
Yes, a lot of back to Germany. That, of course, asks the question, why Germany?
The beer. You guys have the best beer, some of the best beer in the world. Your German bakeries hold a special part, a space in my heart. But yeah, the beer and the basketball is phenomenal.
The bakery? What gets you going in the bakery?
I don't know, man. I'm just the fresh pastries and stuff. Oh, man. It's hard to ignore, especially when you get out of practice, you hit the grocery store and you got the smell of the bakery on the entrance. Like, I'm weak. I got no choice.
But
the butter
pretzels.
You
haven't played in France, though, right?
No, I haven't played in France. Nothing against the French folk, but I got no desire. I'm pretty comfortable where I am.
but that's where the pastries and stuff, they really got that game going on.
Do they?
But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Croissants and stuff. Oof.
Okay.
Baguette.
Maybe I didn't know that. I've had a couple vacations in France, and the food didn't really impress me. Let's just say the quantity of the food didn't really impress me. So Dom, you listed it off. What was that? Six countries? Japan being the sixth one?
Let me go. Belgium, Germany, Spain,
US,
Finland, yep. Japan. Yeah, five.
Got around a little bit. Could have did a little bit better. Yeah.
In making less cities or more?
Just could have traveled a little bit more. Kind of touched another leagues, I guess. I'll blame my agent for that.
So what's the first thing when you come to a new city that you look for?
That's a good question. First thing, the grocery stores probably. Where's the nearest grocery store?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of research cities before I get there. That kind of goes into some of my decisions sometimes,
mm-hmm.
depending on if there's like similar offers or something or different countries. I like to be comfortable off the court. I think that's important in this profession.
So what are you looking for then when you like
just
do research?
Yeah, I mean, I like to see things. I'm a tourist at heart, so anything historical. I studied history in college, so anything historical, nightlife is good. I like to be out of my apartment, man. I don't like to be inside too much. So local fishing spots. I usually wait till I get somewhere to find them.
Oh, you ever went fishing with Hilke already? Because we had him on the podcast and he's also huge into fishing.
No, shame on Hilke for not taking me fishing. I hope he's listening to this. We have not fished together. But he did. He went through all the right steps to get his fishing license. So I don't know if legally he could take me with him.
Probably.
Yeah, that, you know, I had to listen to all that stuff from Hilke, like going, like trying to get his fishing license, and it was kind of difficult. And you know, as of right now, I would say you wouldn't be allowed, but you know, I'm not as expert, but I think you wouldn't be.
Sometimes, you know, I've learned that sometimes it's better to be the dumb American that didn't know what he was. Ask for forgiveness, not permission.
See, it's the first brain pop, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah, Leonard, you would like to start us off? Yeah, I mean, I
already
know.
Started. I'm like right. I'm in the middle of it already.
I know. I see it in your face. You want to talk about basketball?
We can start with your physical and training stuff, because I know you guys, you said it in the pre-talk, already had a workout today.
Oh yeah.
It was a workout and a podcast. Let's put it like this.
Dom and I spent a lot of time together.
Yes. And we always happen to talk about, I don't even know if you are the guy who always starts or if it's me or if it's both. I don't know. But in the end, we always like talking about training.
Yeah. It's fun. It's kind of a passion. I've really enjoyed that aspect of this profession. All the process that goes into it, the preparation, learning different things, how to train the body, all that stuff. So it's very interesting to me. And luckily I work with the GOAT, Dom here. You hear all those back to Germany's in my resume. Dom's been a part of those decisions sometimes. So I've been pretty lucky to have him.
So thanks, what are you guys working on right now?
Father time, defeating father time. We do a lot of agility, a lot of lateral quickness stuff. Trying to get back to that defensive level, especially the BBL level. But yeah, anything I want to. Dom's like a walking encyclopedia when it comes to that stuff. So
I just try. I always try to. And it's, of course, it's a lot of fun working with him because, you are like the true definition of a workhorse, I would say.
maybe an overworker. I've done too much probably.
But exactly that brings me to one of the question. Where does it come from, this commitment to training? You know, not basketball. I mean, the physical part of it.
I had a great high school coach. I had a good middle school coach who loved basketball, but I had a great high school coach. He was ex-college, so he was a big believer in hard work. He works his ass off. But just the way he ran that high school program was pretty dedicated. You know, we had summer workouts, we had camps and all that stuff. And, you know, he kind of told me at a young age to just make sure I was the hardest worker, make sure I outworked everyone around me. So that kind of stuck with me. And then college, once I got to college, there was a little bit of insecurity. I think every person experience it when they go there as a freshman. You're a little insecure whether or not you're good enough to be there or not. So you kind of just work your ass off, maybe out of fear. Also in the classroom too, when I got to college, I was a little nervous. I was too dumb to be there. So we really worked hard that first year. Got to give credit to my mother. She raised us. My brother's an extremely hard worker as well. So I got to give a lot of credit to my mom.
Okay, it seemed like you had this perspective on like how important training is around basketball pretty early. And then I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, in the year 2011, I think you sustained an injury, an ACL tear. And this is also something maybe because we have talked about that before already on the show. First of all, my question, what did that do to you? Like, also in relation to training, yeah? Or right. Was that like a reason you started training even more after, or just, you know, just...
Maybe. That was probably in the middle of my third season pro. Between leaving college and that, the ACL tear, I was just training like we trained in college. I didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. I wasn't doing anything special or researching anything. I was just training like we did in college, how they taught us for those 4 years. And that's, maybe that might've been why that led to the ACL tear. I was kind of pushing legs pretty darn hard during the season, which isn't, there was no Dom and located in Belgium to tell me not to do. So yeah, but no, the ACL happened. That was my first major injury, which of course, you know, involves a 6 to 8 month rehab. You learn a lot going through that, what muscles do, how to train them differently. Every progression through that process, kind of, I educated myself. But thankfully I had West Virginia to fall back on. They took great care of me. I was able to do my whole rehab there. So thankful for them.
And also, do you still think that from that experience, I mean, do you still do things today because of that injury, you know, this in the same way?
No, maybe not. Maybe my attention to detail grew during that process, and maybe I've always kept that with me. But no, I don't train to avoid knee injuries now or anything like that. Once I got over that, it took me about, I'd say, 8 months, maybe 2 more months of live play to get completely over it. I went back to training like an idiot, just a 25-year-old idiot, just trying to be as explosive as possible. Like I said, man, I really that ACL process, that rehab, I came back more athletic. So the way you got to break things down and build your legs back up, and you do all that agility work and all that explosive work. Again, I'm thankful for the resources I had at West Virginia and my trainers, but I came back a lot stronger, a lot more athletic. So I like to tell people that when they tear their ACL, I try to give them some encouragement. But yeah, definitely attention to detail. That's something I kept from it.
This makes me think of, you know, that first year of you in the Pro A was like my first pro year or whatever. Yep. And I remember you talking about the injury, and I was like, at one point I almost caught myself thinking, man, I want an injury like that.
Yeah. Well, what it does, like, yeah, exactly. Well, what people don't realize is this profession, it takes 10 months out of the year. You know, you got the 2 month preseason and you got the 8 month season, depending on how far you go in playoffs, but it leaves very little time to work on training and work on explosion and agility and all this. You know, The hidden blessing behind that injury was it gave me a whole year to train my body and to work on these things. So no, I don't wish that upon anyone, nor I don't think it's a good idea, but it definitely allowed me to train on things other than basketball. Let's just say that.
And the other thing you mentioned that I think in a, you mentioned that before, that it was also a chance for you to learn more about training. Learn more about your body, how it functions and what you should do and what you maybe shouldn't do. And this is, you know, of course, I don't want anybody to get injured, but sometimes it's a blessing in disguise. It's maybe also too much, but you know, it gives you, it is, you can still learn from it, I think, for the future.
You can still find positives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I had my strength coach, Andy Kettler, at the time in West Virginia. Man, he's a walking miracle for me. He broke it all down. He held my hand all through that process. My trainer, my physio, Randy Metter, he's been there for 50 years. He also helped big time. So those guys taught me a lot.
How was it in that period of time, now that you say those guys helped you through it emotionally? Like how hard did that hit you, like this first big injury or something, I would guess so?
Yeah. It was tough news to get from the doctor. I remember calling my high school coach and breaking down. Didn't really know what that meant as far as if I could come back from that. I didn't have a lot of knowledge about this injury. None of my teammates experienced that in college. So I really wasn't too familiar with it. It just sounded awful. You know, it's kind of the worst knee for ligament-wise. So I didn't really know at first. But then once I got the surgery, the fear of getting the surgery in a foreign country where no one spoke English, once I got through that process and got back to my people in West Virginia, their confidence gave me confidence. So it wasn't too bad once I got then, once I got there.
This is actually a huge fear of like Americans, right? Getting surgery in Germany, like with the doctors. Yeah, I heard that a lot already. Like I remember Nick Levis, he got like injured pretty badly here, and like he was scared in the beginning, and we were like, ah, it's all fine, you're like in good hands, and then they all fucked it up. And I was like, oh shit, yeah. Don't spread the word.
Yeah, that's a bad example. I'm sorry for Nick Levis that happened. It was definitely heartbreaking for him. But yeah, if you can imagine being in a foreign country, you get hurt, you gotta mm-hmm. have the surgery there. There's some politics involved as far as who's going to do the surgery, right? So I was in Oss, Belgium, and the team doctor wanted to do the surgery. And of course, my agent and I are researching like who's best to do it. There was this famous name that was popping up. Dr. Martens was a Belgian doctor who was he was flying all over Europe to do these soccer players, ACLs and stuff. Anyways, that seemed like the best name, but I didn't know anything going into it. I met him for 5 minutes. And then what, the 3 minutes before the surgery. And none of that was in English. The translator wasn't great. My teammate had to drive me to the hospital to get it done. It was a pretty wild experience, man.
But you got it done with like the preferred name.
Yeah, so that's kind of all you can do, right? You just go to someone who is well known and who's done a great job in the past. You just got to put your full trust in him and not look back. So. He did an old school surgery, old ACL surgery repair. They don't do it anymore. They did part of my hamstring and my IT band, and they used them both, which is not done really anymore. So I found that out later once I got back to the States. And they're like, oh, he did this. This is kind of an old school way of doing it. I'm like, oh, great. That's just great for me. But she's held up over the years, so I'm thankful for Dr. Martens.
Well, Alex, talking about the Red Womb, maybe one more time. What is, where do you think does the Red Womb benefit you the most? What would you say, like, maybe even like throughout your career and maybe even right now, what is your first line of defense for the Red Womb?
Well, probably the most important would be injury, you know, performance and injury prevention. I'm probably the wrong guy to ask that because I've been hurt often. but just increasing performance. Careers are short. You never know when your time is going to be up. So you want to get the most out of it. Just being explosive, being strong. I like to be stronger than everybody else. It's a more fun way to play basketball. Just increasing performance. And then now, of course, you know, after the couple of injuries, getting into my late 20s, it turned a lot into longevity, injury prevention, things like that. You know, once I got to be with you, Dom, for those first couple seasons, it kind of shifted my focus a little bit. And then since then, it's been a lot more just, maintain performance, but also prevent injury, things like that.
How did Dom make it to like shift your focus a little bit? How did he manage to do that?
Well, his OCD to start with. But he just broke everything down. He was one of my first. I had good trainers in the past, don't get me wrong, but especially in college. But overseas, it was kind of up in the air. A lot of freedom in Belgium. We could do whatever we wanted. They kind of let the Americans do what they want. But Dom like was my first trainer that had a program, wrote everything down. He didn't just tell you things and make you do it because it's your job. He explained why we're doing things. He asked you how you felt while doing it. He listened to you if you didn't like something. So all of that kind of got the wheels spinning a little bit. Of course, I was coming off that ACL rehab, so my mind was already thinking, you know, additional focus on training and protection. So teaming that up with Dom was really nice.
Dom, I cut you off. Sorry.
I appreciate the words.
What a jerk. Yeah, Dom. I'm just here to hype you up.
Yeah, some really interesting insights from you also that, like, you know, you have been in the game now for quite a bit.
12 years.
And correct me if I'm wrong, when I first met you, you were, like you said before, you were always going hard. If we had one practice, you would come in and train like a Like there was no tomorrow. Like also right. a lot of weights. Yeah, right. a lot of back squats. Back squats. Oh, I still remember man. You.
Yeah, I was doing a lot of college stuff. Right, a lot of things I learned in college. Yeah, I've been at this for 12 years now, so I'm pretty old. College was a long time ago. We were doing a lot of Olympic lifts, a lot of weight on the back then, heavy squats. Yeah, you name it, we did it. So we kept that going for a while in Europe. And then, of course, like I said, you know, after training with you or seeing what you were doing with some of our players, able to get that weight off your back was probably the biggest adjustment I made, just seeing the unnecessary of it.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, classic overtraining is a real problem in the sport. I'm a great example of that. Again, when you try to just outwork everybody and work the hardest, sometimes that's not always the smartest thing to do. But hey, I made it this far.
But if you are now able to go back, to the start of your career, just talking about the weight room now, would you do things different?
Of course. I take the weight off my back first. I would lighten up the weight. but a lot more. Some of the stuff we're doing now, you know, some of the explosive stuff, eccentric, a lot of the eccentric movements. I would do a trap bar, things like that. Things where the weight's not on your back. I would start that at a young age. When you're a dumb kid coming out of college, you don't think about longevity, right? You think about the only thing you're thinking about is quickness and explosiveness, and you're just trying to be the best athlete you can be. So, America would, when you're lifting, it's just heavy weight, you know, throw as much weight on as possible, get as strong as possible. So we've learned a lot from then. Even America is kind of shifting. Now that I go back and I see my current college and how they lift and stuff, it's evolved. It's not the same as when I was in college.
Dom, was that enough on your favorite topic?
No, we can always get back to it.
No, it's never enough. We're gonna go back to it tomorrow, Alex.
Yeah, Dom, I've been very fortunate. We have the beautiful weight room in Goodigan with the practice facility, and then Dom brought his OCD-ness and remodeling to Bamberg, and we have this awesome little fine like small weight room. And if you get in there by yourself and you got the music going, it's heaven on earth. So Dom has done a terrific job.
Today, the music was all about Michael Jackson. I really liked
it. Yeah, there was a good feel. There was a good vibe when I came into the gym. I like that. That was from Mo, right? The young kid.
No, that was even my playlist.
That was your playlist? Well done, Dom. Well done. So today was like a do your own workout, recovery day, treatment, whatever you needed. So Michael Jackson was a good vibe.
So what did you do today, like on a day like this, after a game, second day after the game, right? So you had one off day, and now you're coming back in the gym. So take us maybe through your routine real quick.
I'm a little bit different than most of the guys because I'm older. I'm 34. Still adjusting back to the BBL basketball level compared to where I was in Japan earlier this season. So like I touched on earlier, Dom and I have been working on lateral quickness a lot, agility, things like that. We did the ladder. I lifted lower body, a lot of trap bar today. Really trying to build up the VMOs and the glute, just again for those two protective muscles, injury prevention. I did my favorite band walks, which Dom really loves.
Yeah, he always picks the heaviest mini bands and then he walks cross court side to side.
Yeah, that's one thing.
Because he likes it.
That's one thing I've held on since college. So we used to do that all the time in college and. From what I know about the outer thigh and its importance, I've held on to that, even though Dom just laughs at me. He just smiles. He doesn't laugh directly into my face, thankfully.
No, but who am I to take that away from you? I would never do that.
Of course. Of course. And Dom, that's what I love about you, man. That needs to be said, because trainers out there sometimes don't let you do something that you feel comfortable with or makes you feel good. Dom does a great job of, hey, if it makes you feel good, go ahead and do it. That's really
because cool. in the end, you know, tomorrow is practice and you need to feel good. And if you did something today that doesn't make you feel good tomorrow, then I made a mistake.
Yeah. So to Leonard, to fully answer you, back in the day, I would have done a lot more as far as basketball goes, maybe an hour and a half court workout, even play one-on-one with a teammate or something. But now at 34, it's more about It's more about fitness and getting that heart rate up. Like I said, I'm working on quickness, footwork and stuff. That's way more important than, you know, getting up 100 shots or 200-300 shots for me now.
I remember that doing with you though during the parade season, coming to the gym on like on a Sunday shooting and stuff. I benefited a lot from that.
We had some good times. We did the extra work too.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, so let's get on the court now. I said it in the pre-show, I want to try something today. I don't know if this is possible on the podcast, but yeah, let's try this.
Too many things this early in the podcast. I love it.
So, this is your first podcast, right?
Not my very first one, but my first one in Europe.
Ah, okay. See? So what I want to do is I want to talk to you because I really admire how you play the pick and roll. And I kind of somehow want to get some of this, let's call it magic, across. You know, like, so I
prepare yourself. Maybe let's go. Worst answers. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't even know how to phrase the question, really. Like, because where do you go with this? But basically, let's talk. Maybe let's start with what's your mindset going into the pick and roll? Like, what's your goal when you go into the pick and roll? What are you looking for?
That's tough. I haven't always been a pick and roll player. When I was in college and even in my first couple seasons in Europe, I was just a strict three-point shooter. I was just coming off screens and shooting. Most of my teams just threw me in the corner to space the court. Once I learned how dominant the pick and roll was in Europe and it was important, That's when I started working on it. My college point guard, he didn't play overseas. He became a coach. He took a D2 job really close to me in West Virginia. So I got with him after that ACL and started working on ball screen stuff. And he was a point guard, so he helped me a lot with changing speed, making passes out of it. But, you know, once I got to Germany and to Göttingen and the open offense system, that's when it really kind of took off. But as far as what to gang out of a ball screen, you're just looking to make a little advantage. What you got to know going into it, what the defense is going to do, that helps. But any type of advantage, you're reading the defender, you're reading the weak side. My goal is to get a teammate a good shot. I don't like the pull up J or anything like that. Try to get to the rim if I can, but most of the time I'm just trying to create for others.
So do you have like a favorite pick and roll coverage you like to play against?
I like the soft hedge, the big man that doesn't like to leave the paint. I like that. There's a lot of reading involved going in that. You got to read the weak side. You got to set your man up. You can snake it. That gets a lot of fun. You know, that's kind of the ball screen breakdown during the summers that you work on. You're going through all those scenarios. The hedging, you got to be a little bit selfless out of the hedging. You know, once someone wants to hedge hard, you got to get rid of the ball.
Yeah.
That creates the 4-on-3 advantage. You're doing your offense a disservice if you hold on to it. And, you know, sometimes you can hit that roller late, but most of the time you want to get rid of it, create the advantage that way. So definitely the soft hedge. That's one of my favorites to go against.
I was about to ask for your favorite player to go against, but maybe.
My favorite players?
I just had some pictures of like bigs not trying to get out there in my head. And I was like, who does he prefer?
Well, we had I played with like almost a 7-footer in Belgium. He was a big guy, Chris Young, and he wasn't very mobile. So we kept him in the paint. For the defense, the defender as the guard, it's a tough life. You're just fighting over screens nonstop. But you know, it was effective. He was MVP of the league and we were first place, so it's possible. But I didn't mean to insult any bigs out there that don't like hedging.
So now, like, let's say you got the ball on the wing or something, and the screen is coming. Like, do you have some small stuff you look for? Like, how close is the big to the screener, or how are the feet set up of my defender or something? Like, where do you look?
I try to be as patient as possible. I try not to take off too early to get my big man a moving screen. They really hate that.
Patience.
I try to read how much separation he gets. Some of the best thing bigs can learn is create separation from their defender before getting to a ball screen. You can make a lot of money that way. That helps knowing what's going to happen after the ball screen. So if a big man's late, but he's still trying to hedge, he's going to be screwed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not overthinking it, but I'm just kind of looking at how the big guy's coming with my opponent, with my teammate.
Mm-hmm. What are you looking at on at your defender?
Well, they can try to ice me. Sometimes that happens. They like to get on the hip.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too much of a bump the ball screen guy. I've never really had that type of explosion. I don't have a sick crossover that's going to get anyone. So most of the time I'm going to use the screen. That's where I get my advantage.
This makes me feel really good.
Does it? Yeah. Yeah. Never in the history of my game has someone wrote bump ball screens. That's for sure. So yeah, as long as he's not doing anything funny, I don't care what he does, because I know I'm going to go shoulder to shoulder. Mm. I'm big. I'm strong enough to rub my man into it. He's not going to bump me off the ball screen or push over. So I'm not too worried about him as long.
And,
but it, in the end, I mean, it's a lot of improvising, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of reading. You can do things in your workouts during the summer that can help you with that. Depending on who's training you and how many bodies you got, reading the weak side, things like that. But yeah, it's just experience. It's just getting those reps in. I've always enjoyed passing. I had good assists. I set a record in assists in high school, and I did pretty well in college. So I've always enjoyed getting a teammate a shot. That's kind of, I love that part of basketball when the ball's moving and being shared. So that just translated perfectly to ball screens in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, the passing, like being able to throw different kind of passes with like both hands, that's huge in the pick and roll, right? To like be versatile. Yeah.
Yeah. It helps me a lot with my height. I'm not limited as far as deflections go.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also, I've been super reckless. I don't care if I turn the ball over. If a behind the back pass is there, I'm going to try it. I mean, screw it. If it works, it works. If not, my turnovers have always been very high, which is very encouraging to my big man, because I'll force any pick and roll to get them the ball. But yeah, for the young listeners, if anyone's young listening to this, passing with both hands is very big. And any wing player out there, if you're a great, there's tons of great scorers, but if you can get off a ball screen and create for others, that just adds to your value. So,
man, I think that was a lot of like. Like you said, any young ballers out here, or maybe even older ones who are trying to like learn, I think there were a couple of good points.
Yeah, it gets boring during the summer though, right? Everybody just wants to work on shooting,
yeah,
and their strengths, but it's tedious to work on passing, to you know, sit at the elbow and work on the left hand pass to the corner.
Mm.
Again, I've had great trainers I've worked with during the summer that made me do it, but. That's not the most exciting thing to work on.
Yeah.
What is your take on that? I think you also, you either have that or you don't. I mean, of course you can work on it, but you know, if the IQ is not there, it's tough, right?
Yeah, I guess you got to be a decent passer to begin with. Otherwise, no one's going to put you in a ball screen. But just to be able to like, everyone has a strong hand coming off a ball screen to fire that pass to the weak side corner when that weak defender's helping too much. That's what everyone has. Mm. Now, if you can do that going the other way, then your offense isn't limited to only getting you to your right hand in ball screens, right? So I played for a Spanish coach in Bilbao who he didn't make us try to use our left hand in ball screens. He made all of our whole offense was getting our right-handers downhill to the right hand. When you can use both hands and hit the corner and the weak side guy with both hands, then you're not limited. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, that was one of my biggest limitations, if I think back on that level.
Yeah, most players, yeah. they pass better with, of course, their strong hand. That's not just you, Leonard.
Thank you.
Yeah. But a real fan of the game, when you come off and throw an offhand pass for a pick and roll assist, they really appreciate that. I had Marco Grimaldi as a teammate in Goodigan, and every now and then we would throw, each of us would use our left hand, and we would just kind of look at each other like, all right, you're working on that, I can tell. So we both had a mutual respect for any left hand attempt during the games.
I like it.
So that was fun.
This is so funny to hear these things now, though, when you're talking about it, and that there is so much other stuff going on that, like, between players that people just don't see. Huh?
It's, yeah, little things that happen during the practice or the games are just more fun, definitely with teammates. If you have cool teammates, like I have that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
funny that you just mentioned it. Leonard, do you still have some? No, but otherwise, I would like wanted to transition. Add something from the.
Go ahead, Dom.
Yeah, there you go, Dom. Interrupt him back. Take that, Leonard.
I wanted to add something to the basketball side of things because, you know, since we're talking about it right now, I would just like to get your opinion on that. Because I think in professional basketball, everything comes down to details. Yeah. Do you get that deflection at the end? Yeah, that doesn't give you the ball, but that maybe gets your opponent out of rhythm or something. Yeah, do you? I don't know. Are you on the help side? Maybe this one, like, half step more or less. I think that makes a difference these days in professional, or like has always been made a difference.
Yeah.
But how? What is your take on that?
Hit the three, the buzzer beater. That's general. All that matters, man.
Right. No, yeah, don't worry about all that. Just have fun. No, you're right, Dom. Attention to detail is huge. My first college coach, John Beilein, for the first 2 years, huge attention to detail guy. They would cut practice film every day. We'd watch it every day. He would cut it down to the very step you're taking. So that kind of taught me very young how important it was. I saw the advantage to self-criticizing yourself that way and then getting and seeing the results in a game at a very young age. So thankfully that I just carried that over to my pro career. But yeah, that's huge in basketball. Just being in the right positions, like you said, you're on the weak side or whatever in defense. That can help you a lot, especially if you're not the most quick or athletic guy. Knowing where you're supposed to be or knowing the correct position or how you're supposed to do something, that can give you a huge advantage.
Spacing is probably also a big thing, huh?
Yeah. Spacing is huge. Players who don't understand spacing can ruin an offense, and they're frustrating to play with. But at this level, and the BBL in Germany for sure, it's never a problem. The Spanish are very adamant about it. You know, I've done 2 years played in Spain. They really push spacing. They want you wide. They want you deep into that corner. They want to create as much space as possible, which – of course, we all know helps any offense.
This, like, I was really active on Instagram today before this episode. I asked for some questions, but it was like 10 minutes before we started recording. So we didn't get too many.
Well done.
Yeah, our social media game is not on point yet, but we're trying.
That's all right.
And one of the questions was regarding your relationship to Johan, you know, coming back always. And I think that is probably one of me saying this from the outside is probably one of the things you guys really connect with, the attention to detail, because Johan, he's really into that also, like you said, with the practice video and stuff like that. Is that something you would like underline, I guess?
Yeah, I would definitely give him credit for that. We kind of share that approach to the game, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to preparation. But yeah, did you want me to answer as to why I always come back to Johan, or you just asked?
If you have something more to add, go ahead. If not, I was just going to answer that question for you.
No, that's all right. Well, there's just a lot that I really appreciate about his coaching and the freedom he gives his players. The open offense is some of the most fun basketball I've played with. He recruits high IQ and high character guys. So some of my most fun years off the court have been with his teams. Some of the friendships I've made, the best friendships I've made have been on his teams just because he recruits that way. But yeah, his attention to detail is great. His preparation is second to none. All those things have led to a successful season for me personally, but also for our teams in the past.
Yeah.
And it's helped my career every time. So, I owe him a lot. But with that being said, we've been at each other's necks multiple times. We're both kind of stubborn individuals. We both want to win, but at the same time, we'll go at it too. We So that's kind of been fun. It's been a love-hate relationship over the past, whatever, 4 or 5 years that we played together. But no, I appreciate him and how he does things, and definitely the way he coaches and his style of play.
Yeah, but that's something also really important. I'm glad I asked that question, because like the ups and downs, but in the end, you guys know what it's about. Like, you know what the motivation of the other is, and then it can go get heated. It's not even with, like, you see that in every professional sports. It's normal. People go at each right. other. And I think, like, if you know in the back of your mind what it's all about, it's easier to handle this, right?
Yeah, and it's also to deal with certain things. If you're uncomfortable or you're not liking how one the other person's doing something, you know, the fact that we both enjoy winning more than anything, that helps you get through some of those moments.
So let's talk a little bit about, like, you've been on successful teams. And so to start this off, I was like thinking, what did these successful teams have in common to you?
Well, I think team character is huge, like I touched on already. Getting a good group of guys together is only going to build your team chemistry. That leads to a lot of success, especially in a short 10-month time where you got to work together and perform. The closer you are, the more you hang out off the court and things like that, the better you're going to perform.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my best teams, some of my most successful teams, the only championship I've won was in Goodigan. Those were some of the closest teams I've ever been on as far as off the court goes.
Mm.
Talent also helps. If you recruit good players, talent helps. Yeah. If you can go out there and find a Raymar Morgan or a Khalid El Amin, then you'll be okay.
Yeah.
You don't have to hang out off the court.
That's funny.
Yeah. But I think that's huge. I think that's one thing Europe is hanging on to.
Don right now.
I hear you guys. I'm good.
I see Dom.
I'm here. I see you.
Oh, we're back.
Continue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where were you guys at? I think I was off for like half a minute.
You tell us.
Okay. Mm. Dom, did you ask something afterwards, after we started busted out laughing?
Oh, no. No, he kept talking. It was all good.
You just kept talking. I didn't even hear that. Jeez, I just kept laughing.
It was a terrible answer. You didn't miss anything. I was just actually talking. I was talking about your shirt the entire time.
Okay, good. That needs to be talked about.
It really does. If you would have wore that while you were on Instagram before this, you would have got a lot more questions.
I was, actually.
Oh, okay.
All right.
He was talking about how important, like, relationships to players are, but also that if you have talent, mm. that, you know, that you don't have to hang around with the guys if you have talent on the team, because, you know. And according, also referring to that, of course, relationship to your teammates, they are important. But how about the relationship to the coaches and staff?
That can be a little tricky for Europe, especially for younger players coming from America. Your fellow employees, basically, you know, they got a job to do, you have a job to do, but you're both riding on each other to be successful in order to climb the ladder in this profession, right? So it's an interesting relationship. You can have different types of coaches. I had a Yugo coach my first year. That was interesting to get used to. But the best thing you can do if a young player is listening, the best thing you can do is communicate. If you have anything going on that you're feeling, don't lean on the agent. Go talk to the coach. Every coach I've ever played for appreciates it. Good things have always come from any conversation or communication. There's tons of unhappy Americans in Europe. They're not happy with their shots or their playing time or their role. But as long as there's open lines of communication, usually it's smooth sailing.
Brain pop alert again. Yeah. This is really important.
Brain pop, yeah. I was about to say, yeah.
So you said you played for a Jugo coach, and we talked about coaching styles on this show already. And okay. To me personally, the god out there is obviously Ito, with like his very free style of coaching, I guess, like, you know. And then there's, let's say, on the opposite, on the other side, it's more like the Jugo coaching, let's just say, to put it very easy, I would guess. What type of coaching do you feel like fit you best?
Fit me best? Well, I had, again, I had two coaches in college, John Beilein and Bob Huggins, who are polar opposites. Two complete different styles, two complete different coaching styles, and complete different ways to motivate a player. Both are great coaches. Both are Hall of Fame coaches, have done great everywhere they've gone, success out the roof. But John Beilein was more of a build your confidence up guy. He was more of about, you know, make you feel good so you play good. Mm-hmm. Bob Huggins came in. He was more of a challenge his players guy. He would kind of, you know, he'll tear you down and challenge you in order to build you up. And as long as you have tough skin and you want to prove someone wrong, then you can flourish under that. So I think a lot of times I get the question, who did I prefer playing for? Of course, in those tough moments with Bob Huggins, I didn't prefer that. But I saw my game take a lot more steps and progressed a lot more under Bob Huggins. Just how often he challenged me, how it was damn near impossible to impress him or make him satisfied. He constantly would just hold you accountable every step of the way. So I think I do well under that. I got no problem being yelled at. That got me ready for Europe, playing for Bob Huggins. As soon as I got over here, especially with my first coach, my rookie season, Jugo, his yelling didn't bother me at all because I was used to that coming from college. So definitely prepared me. But as long as that yelling and that criticism and that challenging doesn't go too far across the line, as long as you have that mutual respect for each other, again, you're both fellow employees. As long as you don't cross those lines, then I like that style. I like coaches who hold people accountable.
Because I've been thinking about this a lot, like, because in my work right now, I'm getting like deeper into like neuroscience and stuff, like how the brain works and everything, and to unfold your potential. And like, to cut a long story short, you know, it's about like really about positive vibes to like keep the creativity and like get you going. And then sometimes in the back of my mind, I have some coaches and I'm like, oh, this is definitely not unfolding your potential if you look at it like this.
Right.
But then in the end, you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
It all depends on the player, right? So you damn near need a psychology degree now to coach. There's other players who will completely shut down when you yell at them or you constantly criticize them. You'll get nothing out of them, right? I've had a teammate in Belgium, you know, score 3 points a game, didn't do well, and then he went on to play in the NBA. Right. So it just depends on who you're coaching. You got to adjust to each player. Me personally, I'm a follow the order, do your job type of guy. As long as you tell me what you want, I'm going to do my best to do it. So I don't mind it. But like you said, some players can shut down and you can get nothing out of them, depending on who it is.
So let's say, I don't know if I can, you had like a coach in the beginning who's really just like, let's say the Aitu style, the very perfect, like, here you go, Alex, like, be free, go ahead. Do you think that would have, you know, like, I don't know how to frame it, but do you think
like
that
with Phil Jackson?
Yes, yes. Would that have influenced you to the positive, you think, or a negative, or didn't change?
I'm not sure. I don't think I've ever had a coach like that. Brad Dean, I had an American coach in Belgium, Brad Dean. He gave me probably the most freedom. He was the most laid back. He had a Phil Jackson kind of vibe to him. I enjoyed the freedom. I enjoyed the vibes of that team. Mm-hmm. I thought at times we maybe underperformed or didn't maybe meet our potential. Mm-hmm. I would love to get into coaching one day. I have no idea what kind of coach I'm going to be or how that's going to translate, but yeah, it just depends. I think we're moving towards that. I think the game is moving. I've been playing for 12 years, so it was a lot different, yeah, 10, you know, a decade ago. We're moving towards that now, where you gotta be positive. You gotta build people up. You gotta make sure your team is feeling good before a game, as opposed to feeling bad, down, and pressured. You know, that falls on the coach and the leaders of the team.
Yeah, I think it's just like you said earlier. You described the relationships and stuff, and like if that relationship is strong and like you know the mutual goals and stuff, I think you can handle some of the, let's say, bad stuff or whatever, or like the hard stuff. Yeah,
the lows and highs, right? There's exactly. All throughout a season, there's lows and highs, and you never want to get too high, you never want to get too low.
Yeah.
As long as you got decent character, you'll get over those low moments.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, really interesting thing you said that a coach needs to find out in what way he can talk like to you, for example, and in what way he can talk to another guy, that not everybody responds to the same thing in the same way. I think that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would also agree with you that we're going in the direction where. It's getting more in this way, you know, that it's more like that coach is trying to build you up more instead of doing the opposite.
Yeah. Especially once you get to the pro level and you got, you know, we're grown men. We're all grown men working together. There needs to be a certain respect level that you have for each other. And you never want to cross the line of, hey, I'm still a grown man. You got to talk to me in a certain way, right? Like, you never want to cross that line with a player, because then there's just no going back from it. You can come hard on a player, come down hard. You can criticize, but then you got to, you know, maybe pull them into your office, have a man-to-man conversation, tell them you're just trying to get the most out of them. You know, you gotta build that rapport with a player, otherwise. He's just either going to shut down or call his agent and tell him to get out of here, you know?
That's something Melo said also. He was like, he had a coach in Frankfurt, Dom DeMello. He was on the podcast also. And he was also saying, yeah, I had somebody like criticizing me all the time. And I was like, what the hell is going on? Like his confidence went down. And after, like, then his coach told him, hey, I'm doing this because I want you to get better. Like, I believe in you. That's why I'm on you so hard. And after realizing that, that kind of shifted in his mind. You know, that's something he needed. And then it was fine again, I guess. Yeah.
Again, goes back to communication, right? Communicating with your players, telling them why you're doing things, so they're not left in the dark, just feeling like you're just hating on them.
Yeah.
Right.
So now let's talk on the situation now a little bit. How? I don't know how often, like, you change club during the season already. But I guess that's a very different approach to come to a team that has already went through preseason, a couple of games and stuff, and they already have their way in a way, I guess. How do you integrate yourself? Like, not losing your personal style of play, like something you want to bring to the team, and on the other side, knowing that they already have something going, I guess.
Yeah, there's going to be an adjustment period. I think I've done it maybe three different times in my career, this being the third time, if I'm not mistaken, where I've left a team and joined a team.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely an adjustment. It's tough. You want to play your game, but also you're just trying to help, right? So I think it's important to just start with making winning plays, whether that be shooting, whether that be points, assists, rebounds, or defense. You just try to help make winning plays. And then
deflections.
Yeah. Anything you can bring. Yeah.
Dom, you and your deflections. That's what you always.
Deflection always. They always work.
They're important. They tell you how hard your team's playing, for sure.
For the last 5 years, I've been counting deflection. I know what I'm talking about here. Okay.
Right.
All right. Besides deflections.
deflections. Yeah. No. Just you start with making winning plays. You start with getting to know the guys, learn how they play in practice. As time goes on, it gets better. You find out exactly kind of what the team may need from you, and hopefully the coach is telling you exactly what he expects. And then you just go from there. It's at the end of the day, this is a business. We're all here to do a job, and the goal is to be as successful as possible so we can all prosper. So as long as that's the main goal of the team, then adjustment isn't really too tough.
Communication sounds like a very important part of that again, I guess.
Yeah, Yeah, yeah. And once, you know, again, as long as winning is the most important, teammates won't have a problem with you coming into a new team, hopefully. You know, as long as you're not coming in jacking shots, I usually mess things up.
Dom, I know you have a question.
I need the man.
Sorry. Ask question, whatever you wanted to ask.
Well, I actually... What do you demand from yourself in this, in, you know, in this situation? It's too much. Okay,
let's no,
everything.
I have such unreachable expectations for myself. Every year, it's just foolish. It's foolery if I had to say it out loud or write things down. I had a coach 1 year make us write things down, and at the end of the season, I was like, "What the hell was I thinking? That's not even possible." So yeah, my expectations are never—they're never living in reality. But no, just you know, Johan came here from Gudegen. I saw who he recruited. You know, I have ex-teammates on this team, so I was kind of following them as the season was going on. I knew it was loaded with talent. And by the time I got here, there was a little bit of underperforming in the league, doing great in Europe, but not great to BBL. So, you know, hopefully the things I can bring, I like to think I can bring to a team is leadership and intensity. I compete and I'm kind of a jerk as a teammate when it comes to any type of competition. I really like to win and hate losing. So any intensity level that can be raised in practice always leads to more success. So as long as you got guys who aren't afraid to get chippy, get after it, push each other in practice, even talk a little shit sometimes, that helps. That's all going to translate into victories. Mm. So
that's probably already going into like another question we have written down. Like, what is your role being a veteran, or like, what do you bring to the team as a veteran? I guess that's going that way already, or is it something else you need to add there, I guess?
No, yeah, being the oldest guy on the team, this is the second year now I've been the oldest guy. You try to lead by example, first of all, because if you don't lead by example, you're a hypocrite. No one listens to you when you come to start barking at him or being a leader, right? So you got to lead by example. You try to share any wisdom you have with them as far as your past experiences, especially if you have like a rookie or a young guy who are going through some pains as a rookie, or, you know, you kind of help them through those moments. In this specific situation, I've played for Johan in the past. We got a lot of guys who are first year guys for Johan. So I can bridge the gap a little bit as far as what he's expecting and what they're, perceiving. I can help with that. I like to think, but yeah, this team is so talented already. It's not like I need to do too much to raise that. It's more about just being a calming presence on the court, definitely in difficult moments, having fun, reminding people to smile and enjoy this. I mean, we play a game for a living.
Yeah,
we're working during a pandemic. There's a lot of guys who couldn't get jobs this year, so remind guys to count their blessings, smile, drink a beer every now and then. And yeah, have fun at the end of the day, because, you know, it's my 12th year and I know every guy says it, but careers go quick. I've had 2 years taken away from me with injuries, so you really got to enjoy every moment, and I try to instill that in all my teammates.
Strong words.
That was a nice answer. Yeah.
You like that? Yeah. Let's just cut the rest of this podcast and just promote that one answer. I'm just kidding.
So Alex, when I thought about you, like before, sometimes I try to prepare myself, you know.
Ooh,
some
yeah,
what setting was this? Geez, were you in the bathtub? Were there candles involved?
Yeah.
When was this? Was this at midnight? Did you wake up from a dream?
Exactly. Midnight, I took a walk, you know, and I was just like, you know.
I was on the beach with wine in my hand and
I walked past your old house here in Göttingen, and you know, and I kind of something
reminiscing about the locker room moments.
No, but something that actually popped up in my mind was, and that's something we haven't talked about in this podcast, Probably because I'm not really like in, let's say, or don't know much about it, that I don't know how to like talk about it much. But religion, you're a very religious guy, right?
Yeah, yeah, I'm a Christ follower.
Yeah.
Has that not been talked about on previous podcasts? Never really broke that down?
No, we haven't really talked about it in like terms of, you know, how it, what kind of influence it had maybe on your career and like you handled stuff. And maybe you could talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, no problem. Religion and politics, those are two subjects that are always tough. No, I grew up in a Christian family. My mother was a youth pastor. My brother is a pastor now. Very religious family. The biggest thing that it helps me with, it just gives me strength. It gives me certainty that, you know, I'm being looked after, that there's a bigger plan. And, you know, of course, everything happens for a reason. That's given me some strength to get through certain moments, especially injuries, difficult seasons, maybe with a coach or a role or something. But no, I've leaned on it hard. Mm. I'm thankful for it. I could do a lot better. I'm definitely I'm a Christ follower who sins a lot. So his mercy is something I really enjoy, his mercy and grace. But I'm very thankful for my faith and my upbringing. I've had some awesome teammates who also share my faith, and we've had some great conversations on the bus, and even, you know, some teammates who are non-believers who don't, you know, have had some great, heard some, a lot of great perspectives on, away from religion. So, man, I'm not afraid to talk about it. It's just, you know, not everyone, you got to be respectful of everyone's, opinions. You can't really, you want to promote Jesus, you want to give him all the glory, and I've tried to do that my best, but at the same time, you know, if someone's not wanting to hear it or they have different feelings, then you got to respect that person. So,
is also spirituality something you're into?
Yeah. I pray often. I probably should pray a lot more. I need to read my Bible a lot more. I do a terrible job with that. I get down with the daily devotionals, and I love my Christian music, and I like to worship all the time, even when I'm alone. My poor neighbors over the years, they're just taking a beating with my music, probably on the volume levels. But yeah, it's kind of tough. One of the toughest parts about this profession is being away from your church and your ability to worship in person and hear a sermon. You know, some of that's really enjoyable during the summer, to get back to a church, an English speaking church, where you can hear the good word every Sunday. It can remind you and put you back in that perspective and prepare you for the week. You're kind of left on your own over here. Like I said, when you have a teammate who also shares your faith, it's great if you can find some time to maybe have like a little Bible study or something on the road, or like I said, even conversations on the bus. That's really encouraging. But you're really on your own, and you gotta protect that a little bit. You don't want to get so stuck in your daily life where you're not, you know, putting God first or going to him in prayer. So it's been a lot more focused for me as of later in my career than it was early. I had a lot of fun earlier in my career. I was riding the wave a lot. But no, it's been a lot more, a bigger focus for me as of late. And of course, the strength factor that comes from it, I'm very thankful for.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, it's an interesting for me to hear. You know, it's a different perspective.
Yeah, religion is great. Don't ask me about politics or Donald Trump, for heaven's sake. But
COVID.
No. Yeah, COVID. Religion, you know, end of the day, man. If you're a believer or not, just be thankful, count your blessings, right? Enjoy the experiences. The glass half full mentality is very powerful. Perspective and attitude can carry you a long way.
Yeah.
I use my faith to control both those things. So again, it's super helpful.
Yeah. I think having a faith is something really strong. No, like whatever you believe in, having a faith in general is probably a very strong thing to have.
Yeah, I like to think it holds society together at some point, right?
Yeah, true. Yeah, so towards the end, we have a couple of like go ahead questions, like maybe the first one is a quicker one. Best buy below 100 euros for your career.
Oh, I think I know what it is.
Now you're making me nervous. I'm going to get the wrong answer. No, way to pressure your podcast guest. Jeez. Under 100 euros.
I have something in mind also. But I'll tell you afterwards.
Oh, thanks, fellas. So now my answer is going to be two wrong answers. That's great. This year I purchased a air fryer, which was under 100 euros, and that changed the game in the kitchen. Really enjoy my food. Let me think of something else since you guys didn't know that and that's not your answer. Under 100 euros, not counting basketball shoes or any sports equipment. All my recovery tools are, I'm so thankful for and need them so much. They're all $1,000. They're all expensive. Let me hear your guys' answers.
Something when I think of you, actually when I see like these green long bands, these Terra bands or whatever, you pop up in my mind. Like
I love Leonard. What? Leonard, I love my bands.
Yes.
Thank you for reminding me. I think there's one in reaching distance. I keep my bands with me all the time. It's like my security blanket. This is my favorite thing
that's
to just the
one.
Carry around.
That's exactly the one. Like you had that yes. already in Pro A.
I'm emotionally attached to this green band. This is
this is your faith.
Yeah, huh? my favorite. It goes with me everywhere, even on vacation. Mm. I get made fun of all the time for it. Great stretching tool, strengthening tool. No, I'm sorry I didn't get that answer correctly because I love my green bands.
Yes.
The amount of time I spend with that thing is disturbing.
Yeah, probably.
And how much love I have for it. That's probably why I'm still single. Anyways, thanks for the better Leonard, answer. I will take that green band over an air fryer every day of the week.
Well, Leonard, two fools seldom differ. Huh? I thought
really?
About exact the same thing.
Oh, wow.
Well, you know, the reason why I didn't think of it as of late is because I don't need to carry it with me everywhere because Dom has every band ever made, has every foam roller ever existed. So I'm never going to be without when I'm playing under Dom. So I don't need to take all my bands with me. True. When I was in Japan, I was taking two bags to the gym every day of recovery equipment, stretching, foam rollers. I had to carry it all with me. But here I don't have that problem because of Dom.
Nice. This was a good question. I like this one.
That was a good question.
We got to keep
this one. It was a good question and a good answer by you, Leonard. I don't even need to be here.
I'm rocking this podcast. I don't need you guys.
Well, strongest shirt, strongest answers.
Should I? I have like a little deeper jeez, question.
Right. Not religion. Deeper than religion.
No, I mean, about the weight room. You know, my biceps.
Yeah, I've been doing curls off camera this entire time.
Maybe based on your career, but doesn't necessarily have to be based on your career. But what was your biggest mistake and what did you learn from it?
Biggest mistake. Man, that's tough. Biggest mistake of my career. One of the best.
Well, just in general.
That's
huh?
all right. That's all right. One of the best decisions of my career was going to West Virginia, my university. I grew a lot and got a lot from it, played for two great coaches, and I think that really propelled me into my professional career. So that was one of my best decisions, thankful for it. My biggest mistake, I don't want to say like picking, you know, a wrong contract, or I never really followed money in my career. I never let that be the leading factor. I maybe could have done that a little better.
That's a mistake, Alex. That's the mistake. You have
is
it
that
right
a mistake?
There.
I chose having fun and enjoying the game a lot. Every time I returned to good again, it wasn't because of money. It was to get back to enjoying basketball. But I think the AC, I don't know if this is even true to be even be a mistake, but the ACL injury came my third year. I was lifting like an idiot. I didn't know anything about lifting. I was just following the what my strength coaches taught me in college, and we lift really hard. So I was kind of doing too much. I wanted to be stronger, and I tried to lift really, really hard through the season. And I remember the week before the ACL injury, I maybe snuck in an extra lift, a third lift, and three lifts, strong lifts in 1 week before an injury. I always kind of thought that might have led to it. Who knows if that's true or not. But yeah, learning to train smarter as a part of harder, that was a big deal that came from that mistake.
No, interesting.
Another mistake, not bringing my dog over this season. It's one of the worst decisions I've ever made.
Oh, damn. I thought she was there.
She should be here. I didn't want her. She's 10 now. She's older. And the Japan travel, that would have been a little
selfish. Came straight from Japan to Germany?
Yeah. So at first I went to Japan and I didn't take her because of the travel. Yeah, okay. And I didn't really know about Japan culture that much. So, and then I came here, thought about bringing her, meeting me here or something. But she's living a good life now in Florida with a friend. And yeah, it would have just been selfish.
I have one more question. It kind of is, I don't know if we should keep this or if it's kind of the same as the last one or like going in the same direction, but let me try. The toughest no that turned out to be great for you afterwards.
Ooh, the toughest no turned out to be great, excluding all ex-girlfriends. Toughest no that turned out to be great.
That's a good one already.
You can leave that.
Toughest no that turned out to be great. That's a tough question. That's a great question, by the way, Leonard. Phenomenal question.
Thank you.
Maybe I'm thinking, my mind just wants to go to contracts for some reason. I think I came out of college. I was a pretty good college player. I had some hype coming out. I ended up getting like 12 to 15 NBA workouts. I was on some draft boards. I got a call on draft night and it didn't happen for me. And then I spent the next two summers on summer league teams. Didn't happen for me. I gave it one more shot in the D league and it didn't happen for me. And that D league experience, that no interest, which would, you know, ultimately be a no for the NBA, really let me cut ties with that and just kind of pursue the European, dream of maybe reaching a high level. Once that happened, once I got to Europe, especially Germany, I had a goal of possibly reaching the Euro league. The highest I've ever played now has been Euro Cup and Champions League. But that no for American, the NBA basketball, kind of let me get past that and move on and reset my goals to European basketball, which ended up being great and had put me on this hell of an adventure over the past, you know, 10 years or whatever. So maybe that no led to something great, which I'm very thankful for.
Yeah. That's a very good answer.
That's a great answer.
Yes.
Yeah, but I'll take the life experience over that any day. I would never have met you guys, man. Leonard, I would never have had you as a teammate. We never would have got those workouts in. Dom, all those hours I kept you away from your woman never would have happened. Kept you away from home, sleepless nights. Yeah, you guys, definitely. All the relationships built over the years, that's something that'll last a long time, man.
Nice. I think that's something really nice to end with. Right, Dom?
Yeah.
But yeah. Obviously, Dom, you have one more question. I know.
Yeah, I know. Yourself.
Top that question, Dom. Do better.
This is. I think I haven't even told you about this question. Maybe now you have to.
Oh, from the back pocket.
Maybe you have to come up with something on short notice.
The ace up the sleeve.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to pull that out now.
Oh, wow. Pulling out on the last question. All right.
Yeah, tell us, do you know anybody who you would like to listen to on this podcast?
Ooh, you've had some of my favorite players.
Check.
Hey, we haven't had Khalid El Amin, huh? You haven't listened to that one.
I haven't listened to that one. You had Harper, which was a great podcast. You had Stockton's, which was cool. Someone else. Let me think. Good question. I'm thinking of all my past teams and my teammates. But you would have to know the person, right? It couldn't just be a random.
Well, not if you can make it happen and like convince them, you know?
Yeah, we could stick to the BBL. That would be people you would know and at least be familiar with.
Oh, he's smiling now, puppy. He's smiling. Something is coming up.
One of my favorite teammates was Jamal Boykin for many reasons. I think a podcast with Jamal Boykin would be super entertaining and enlightening.
That's true.
And I think it would be cool to hear someone's perspective and adventure after the career ended. What's happened to him after? He went to the Lakers, you know, he won a championship working for the Lakers. And he's just a great guy, man. He's funny as hell. He's a great dude.
Awesome.
I think that would be a good podcast.
That's that's your best answer yet so far, I would say. Nice.
That means the rest of the answers just sucked. I thought this was a beer podcast. I was ready for all my favorite beer answers.
No, this is a really, because he was one of the greatest and nicest guys, most positive guys you ever been around.
Heart of gold, man. I haven't talked to him in a long time, but 20 years go by, I see that man, he's getting a bear hug and I'm buying him a beer because great teammate, super supportive,
super positive,
unbelievably positive, like not real, not a reality version of being positive, just all the time positive, encouraging and just having a damn good time, and enjoying the hell out of life and the game. He's a joy to follow on social media now. He's kind of settled down. He's got a family, kids. But yeah, man, get him on the podcast. Yeah. Let's hear about that season with the Lakers.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. We're going to try to make this happen for sure.
He would definitely make time. Yeah. I'll send him a message on your guys' behalf. But I know it wouldn't take more than a message to get him on here.
Cool. Yes, Alex. Thank you so much for being here. We really enjoyed it. I think it was fun. We had a lot of brain pops, I think. And
we had a lot to laugh.
And I wish you all you guys all the best for the rest of the season for sure.
Thanks, man. It was a joy to be on here. I'll share it as best I can, promote it. But thanks for having me. Love you guys, of course. Thankful for you both. Leonard, man, we got to figure out when the next time we're going to see each other.
For sure. Whenever you're in Göttingen or I'm coming to Bamberg.
Yeah, once you make it to Bamberg, once these restrictions lighten up.
I will.
And thank you guys for keeping Corona out of the podcast. It's it's a joy not to talk about it and get back to talking about common things. So
it's possible.
Kudos to you guys. Thank you for that.
All right, Alex, see you.
All right.
All right, fellas. Thank you. Have a good
night. Take care. And you. Bye. Poppies. It's time for the after show. Leonard, what do you think about the episode?
Yeah, I literally just listened to it. We recorded on a Monday. Today is Tuesday night. I just finished listening to it. And I got to say, Dom, props to you. I really liked the part about the weight room. It was really, really interesting to me listening to it afterwards. But I'm guessing your brain pops were also there. So maybe you go ahead and start with got you, you know, brain popped in that period of time.
I mean, first of all, thanks for the compliment. Of course, I had like a few statements from Alex I really liked. For example, when I asked him if he had the chance to start his career all over, like based on the weight room, if there was anything he would do different, and then of course based on his history of injury. He would probably, you know, maybe take a step back from back squats. Yeah, mm-hmm. He said that he would take the weight off the back.
Not too much load on the back. Yeah, that was, yeah.
And, you know, I found, for some reason, I saw myself, when you said that, I was like, yeah, that's probably the exact thing I would do. But
same mistake you did back in the day?
No, I'm not sure if it's the same mistake. I was never like a guy who did heavy back squats. But, you know, in training, you're always looking for, let's say, yeah, you look for efficient ways of training your body. Yeah, and a back squat, you know, that's obviously debatable. I'm not the biggest fan, also not with hoopers, because, you know, they have long legs and therefore they're probably not in the best position to go for back squats. But what I was going to say, I think it's still a method you can use. It depends, of course, on your history and what you did in the past. But I think it's not the most efficient way. It might be still effective. You probably are going to gain some muscle and get stronger also through a back squat. But if you can take weight off the back and still train your legs, I would probably go that route. Yeah, like I said, it's debatable. But when you said that came to my mind, and that's, yeah, I wouldn't say it's a confirmation, but I obviously like that because we sort of have the same background.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because, you know, I asked him what made him change, and, you know, your way of knowing, hey, if that, like, that's maybe not my way, but if it's your way, go ahead and do it. But I'm just going to tell you what I think about it. And then he, like, automatically changed it without you telling him constantly, Alex, this is not good for you. This is not good for you. Blah, blah, blah. You know, that's like not how people actually change their behavior. I think that was really good to hear. Yeah, good compliment for you again.
Well, it was nice to hear what he had to say, of course.
Yeah.
And the other thing, do you want to chip in first and then I come back?
Or? No, go ahead. Right.
The other thing, it was also like, I think that was a sub-sentence. he said, don't get too high and don't get too low.
And damn, you stole one of my brain pops.
Oh, yeah. All right. Cool.
No, go ahead.
And I just, what was it, like 2 weeks ago, I finished a book from written by John Gordon. You Win in the Locker Room First is the name of that book. And he actually had the same sentence in there. And I actually liked it. I've heard that before, but, you know, since Alex said it now, I was like, yeah, this is, it fits also my situation a little bit, because, you know, we play a lot of games, you know, we win games and we lose games. And I think it does make a lot of sense after a win. Of course, you should be happy and, you know, celebrate or just feel good about the win. But at the same time, you should not get too high, because the next game is coming. Yeah? And the same like with a loss. Of course, a loss doesn't feel good. But
don't get too low.
Exactly. Don't get too low. I think that's a very nice sentence. I really like it.
Yeah, and it's a healthy way to compete, I would add to that.
Yeah.
And I had to, at first I had to think, when you texted me today with that quote, I had to think of the Bryson Tiller song, Don't Get Too High, but yeah, that's a different context. any other brain pops I had? Yeah, that was definitely one I really liked, personally, being the nerdy part of the episode where we talked about the pick and roll. I think that's something I want to, you know, do a couple of times, and then we can keep like diving deeper into it, I think, if we like do it constantly and ask players about it. And what else? What successful teams had in common, and the stuff he said about like having relationships with the players, obviously, on and off the court, but also like with coaches and staff, and how important that is, and also how much you can gain out of that. Because like the last questions, like, where he was like stating how much he liked the ride over here and like getting to know the people, the culture and stuff. And that was huge and plays into the stuff you said with being thankful. Mm-hmm. And and interesting, like, also there, like, sometimes it can escalate if players are, or if it's really competitive atmosphere. But in the end, if you know what it's all about and like you have the same goal, let's say, like, you can even get over those lows or highs. Yeah,
true. And I can tell for sure that Alex really liked it. He really liked being on the show. First thing this morning, and when I saw him, he was like, Dom, that was a lot of fun yesterday. I really enjoyed it. So,
yeah. Yeah, high quality time and conversation, I think. So, yeah, let's hope the poppies like it too. Yep. I think, yeah, a lot to take from. And I'm already looking for the forward to the next episode with you. German or English, doesn't matter.
Does not matter.
And, yeah.
All right.
See you guys in 2 weeks, I would say. Dom, have a successful week and good luck at NBC.
Thank you. Sunday, right? Yeah. Yes, no, Saturday.
Saturday.
Yep.
All right, man.
All right, Leonard.
See you.
Bye-bye.